Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Hello and welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. My name is Taylor and I am back, joined as always by my very good friend and co-host, Kelly. Kelly, how's it hanging?
It's hanging all right. In a Kelly's family update, I feel like the monkey paw kind of gripped down a little bit, as my mom was not in the hospital since we last spoke, but my dad was in the hospital since we last spoke. So I'm at 3 hospital stays for my parents out of 2 months. He's back home now, though, so we're getting there. We're getting better.
It's really all happening for Kelly.
Yeah.
Right now. Well, glad to see everyone is home, and hopefully everyone will stay home.
I'm hoping so.
But for this episode of Jumping Bomb Audio, we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about some Tokyo Joshi. We're going to talk Queen of Villains as well, and much more. But before we do that, we, of course, have to do our plugs. Follow us on Twitter at JBomb Audio. You can follow Kelly at Comic Geek Kelly, and you can follow me at Tay Mambo. Subscribe on your podcast app of choice, and if that app of choice happens to be Apple Podcasts, we would really appreciate a 5-star rating and review. And if you're feeling extra generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. So let's get right into it. We are starting with Tokyo Joshi's Wrestle Princess 5 from September 22nd at Makuhari Messe International Exhibition Hall number 6, in front of what I would call a very disappointing 756 fans. Kelly, your thoughts on the show overall?
Overall, I thought it was a very fun show, but yeah, that's a pretty bad number. I don't know, like, and the venue didn't even really look that good, so it didn't help anything. But overall, I thought a very fun show, very much helped by a very strong top two. Without those two, I think I would have been very disappointed by this show.
It is their worst attendance for a Wrestle Princess by, I believe, over 100 fans. I think last year did 864 or something like that. Sort of interesting to see, maybe due to the fact that they're running many more big shows now, or maybe just due that people weren't all that interested.
Yeah.
Or maybe both. So we will have to keep an eye on that moving forward. But the show started off with a singles match between two young wrestlers, two of the youngest wrestlers on the roster, Haru Kazushiro defeating Runa Okuba in 6 minutes and 25 seconds. Kelly, your thoughts on this first match?
I thought it was a really strong opener. These two just keep getting better every time they're out there. So I thought it was a good match and kind of felt like an upset with Haru pulling out the win. But I liked this. I went 3.25.
I thought it was pretty much what you would expect. Haru going for that springboard move near the end, which didn't happen. And I think probably the finish would have made more sense had she hit that and then hit the Fisherman Buster. Although the Fisherman Buster looked very close to disaster there at the end. But I thought a solid outing from both of them. We're sort of at the point now where we know what to expect from the two of these wrestlers. And it was about what you would expect. Some good forearms from Runa thrown in there. But other than that, just a pretty solid match. I should say before the show began, and we will be talking about this in the upcoming shows, it was announced that it will be the two Miyus, Miyu Watanabe and Miyu Yamashita, taking on Shoko Nakajima and Meiko Satomura at All Rise on October 6th. Miyu, I guess, making the plea that now Meiko Satomura is retiring, that she should return, and she will be returning before she retires at that All Rise show. But the next match was a six-person tag match. Himawari, Kaya Toribami, Yoshiko Hasegawa defeated Chika Nanase, Kira Summer, and Uta Takami in 10 minutes and 13 seconds. Kelly, what'd you think about this one?
Kaya has a new cool finish. I like that. Nanase still feels pretty rough to me. But like Uta does too, but she's like an insane gremlin, so it's fine, you know? Like it kind of just works for her. But overall, just perfectly fine undercard match. I went 2.75.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I like the little, I like Himawari, Toribami, and Hasegawa as a little nice mid-card, not necessarily together in that grouping, but I like them as the group of the sort of lower mid-card. I think that's pretty solid. Chika and Kira are sort of the two young wrestlers I'm most concerned about. You know, Uta is still not there yet, but she has something with the personality. Kira and Chika both sort of feel like very undeveloped in really any way. They feel very much like, oh, this is what you should expect from rookies, which makes sense because they are rookies. But in terms of, they just feel a step behind some of the other newer wrestlers. And so that, will be something to, keep an eye on moving forward.
So, before we move on to the next match, I have just been looking at attendance for shows in this venue, and it's kind of making me think that maybe this isn't that bad of a number for, Wrestle Princess. Because earlier in the year, All Japan had a Champion Carnival show that only drew two more people. And that had Kento Miyahara versus Yuma Aoyagi, second from the top on that. And they've only had like five shows in the past 4 years in this venue. Prior to that, in 2023, was an All Japan show that drew 1,000. 2022 was a New Japan show that drew 440. So New Japan in the mud. Ignore that it's just post-pandemic. Immediately post-pandemic was a New Japan show that drew 486. And then the only show they had, like the last show they had pre-pandemic, it was May of 2019, Best of the Super Juniors, and that drew 1,500. So there was a big drop-off post-pandemic for fans in this venue, but it seems like the Tokyo Joshi card is kind of just in line with how the shows draw here for whatever reason.
Well, it'd be interesting to get more data on that. Like, it'd be interesting to get a sort of bigger, I don't know, New Japan card or something and see what happens. Yeah, because
nothing, like, this venue is lucky to host two shows a year. And that was even pre-pandemic. So I don't know why they decided to run this big show here, but it probably was not a great choice.
Yeah, I never really understand. They seem to move it around a lot, and I don't know if that's because of just venue availability or they're just trying something new or trying to draw new crowds, but it seems like moving it in this way has not really helped as the numbers have gone down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're now sort of at the point where the numbers have gone down. Like next year, I'm assuming, you know, you have to assume they'll do Wrestle Princess 6, mm-hmm. you know, to see where they run it and see what number they draw.
Yeah.
Will be interesting. So, but back to the show, the next match was a tag team match, Kakeru Sakaguchi coming in for this show, teaming with Mihiro Kiryu, defeating Toga and Wakano Uehara in 9 minutes and 41 seconds. Thought Mihiro really came alive here in the last 5 seconds of this match with the forearm and the very good looking spine buster. Other than that, didn't really see a lot from her. But I think as we've talked about this mid-card sort of needing help, and I think Kakeru Sekiguchi is a solid addition. You know, not saying she's going to be here full-time, but very good to see her here. She's a welcome addition to the roster in the mid-card just to have another person who you know can go out there and put something together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think they're a fun team. I do like the they look like each other gimmick. I thought Mahiro could actually work on the spine buster. I thought it looked a little light.
Oh, I guess my expectations were low because I thought I don't know what I thought, but
she's gotta watch her Arne Anderson tapes.
You know, I think my expectations are not that she's gonna, you know, deliver a spine buster that's gonna be like, oh, through the mat, but yeah, wow. I can't believe we're disagreeing on 1 3-second portion of the match. That's as much as we disagree.
Yep.
The next match was, it was just a singles match. I feel like it should have a subtitle, though, of Marriage Broken Apart or something. It was a singles match. Ram Kaichou defeating Raku in 7 minutes and 1 second. My first note here was, how do we review this? So I'll throw it to Kelly for his thoughts first.
I thought the regular goofball match of the show delivered here. That being said, this never would have worked without Matsui in the referee role because he was so goddamn funny here. Like, that dude is such a great comedian. And these two, you know, I think they made it work well enough for whatever it was. Not a Matt classic by any means, but I had a very good time watching it. I just threw a gentleman's three on it.
Yeah, my only other note of the match was just describing what happened in the match. Like, it's not even a note. Raku sang Ram to sleep and then accidentally sang herself to sleep. And then Ram woke up for a second and then fell asleep on top of Raku for the win.
Yep.
That was it. That yep. was what happened.
Yep.
But yeah, really a sort of different type of, well, I guess the next match was sort of more classic.
Yeah. I called the next match the work rate goofball match.
Yeah. And the next match was a 6-person tag team match, special guest referee Shiori Aoki, who we have seen before, oversaw a match where Aja Kong, Max the Impaler, and Palm Harajuku defeated Rika Tatsumi, Shino Suzuki, and Yuki Aino in 14 minutes and 55 seconds. This was a fun match. Goofy as you would expect, but I enjoyed it. I liked Aoki as the ref. And there were 2 ref bumps here, which you don't often see in Tokyo Joshi. 2 different ref bumps. So yeah, a fun match, about what you would expect seeing these 6 names in this match.
You know, this reminded me a lot of like Golden Era Chikara, because it was just all six of these wrestlers have such like well-defined characters, and they were able to play off each other so well, and you just had a lot of good dynamics going on in the match, and it was just, it was fun. And you know, it was worked well enough, and the referee was fun. Like, it was just a really good time. I went 3.5 stars on it. Like, this was, it was the work rate goofball match.
And after the all the goofing off, we got to what I would say the serious end of the card. I think most people would agree. The first with a singles match, Emi Sakura defeating Shoko Nakajima in 13 minutes and 47 seconds. Was sort of watching the match thinking, oh, this is, you know, this is fun. This is pretty entertaining. And then once Shoko missed the 619 in the middle of the match, they went into another gear. I thought, oh, this would have been really, really good with a super hot crowd. This was the first time I noticed this crowd is not all that into this show.
No.
You know, I don't know if it was the venue that the, you know, they only had 756 in there. Just didn't seem very into the match, but I thought, man, with a really hot crowd, this would have been great. I still loved it. Shoko got her chest destroyed by Emmy chops. But I still went 4.25 stars. So I still thought it was very, very good.
Yeah, this was great. I ended up going 4 on it. Just Sakura beat the hell out of Nakajima. Down the stretch, things really picked up, and they had a really good back and forth, and just the trading pins and stuff. Just great work all around. Give me that Sakura versus Miyu match. I want it.
We'll see if it happens. I mean, she's picking up wins, so seems to be sticking around.
Yep.
Here in Tokyo Joshi. But yes, a very good match. The next match was a tag team match. The new tag team of Mizuki and Xia Zhao defeating Venyu, the team of Veni and Yuki Kamifuku, in 12 minutes and 50 seconds. Kelly, first I have to ask you, I know that you were excited for the entrance of Venyu. Did you think it delivered?
No. No, I was disappointed. They let me down.
I did think it was a very, I was like, oh, this is sort of like a very plain, pretty basic. I mean, they really didn't have anything.
They didn't have any boys.
They didn't have any boys, but anyone on the show, there really wasn't anything entrance-wise.
Yeah, you're right.
That was all that different than sort of a standard show, and that was the case here. They just sort of came out with telephone, which I don't understand. You know, so many of these companies are like, oh, we're streaming, but we have to mute this song that you've never heard because we don't have the rights. But Tokyo Joshi's like, yeah, here's telephone.
Yeah. Well, doesn't like Cyber Agent have the like rights to a bunch of songs in Japan? So like they actually do license these things?
I had no idea of that.
I thought I remember hearing something about that like years ago.
Is possible, and I would hope that's the case if they're playing this licensed music and not muting it. Although I can't imagine the lawsuit of, you know,
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga is suing Lady Gaga is suing a very small Japanese women's wrestling promotion.
Stopping her Joker 2 media blitz.
For playing telephone one time. But as to the match itself, I don't think seen Xia. I know that she was in NXT for a while. I think that's the only thing she's done. Am I wrong?
She was on the main roster for a while too, but yeah, she was, I'm pretty sure, a product of the PC.
And I thought she looked good here. You know, she has a good look, sort of came out. You know, there was a lot of like English speaking, which I found odd, not necessarily bad, but it was like, yeah, we're going. We're going to get them. And I'm like, no one in the venue has any idea what you're talking about, except for you. But I thought she was impressive. The catch of the Famouser at the end was great. Into that powerbomb, I really liked. I thought this was a really fun match. I thought it was well worked. I went 3 3/4. My one criticism, and it's not really a criticism, but like, what in the world is the world? And this isn't a Tokyo Joshi specific complaint. What are we doing with Venny here? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
She's so talented, and it feels like she's now actively doing really nothing.
Brother, I had big plans for her when I drafted her to my fantasy team.
Well, yeah, if anything's telling you what's going on there, it's the points she's received.
Yeah, like I thought this was her year. Like, going into 2024, I was like, this is Venny's year. She's going to go around. She's going to pick up a bunch of titles. She's going to have a killer showing in America and become huge there. And none of that happened.
Yeah, it's just sort of a bummer. I mean, I guess you think of it as, I mean, it happens to sort of like a lot of Joshi wrestlers where, you know, they're not sort of in the bigger companies. So they just sort of hang out around, you know, the smaller indie companies. And then it's like, oh, they're not doing as much as they probably could be doing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe having like seen her rise and be like, oh, she's getting so much better. Oh my God, she's so good. Mm-hmm. I don't know, puts a different perspective on it, but I was just sort of watching this like, oh, she's so great. And here she is in Tokyo Joshi, like in a mid card match.
She was a body in this match.
Yeah. Not the focus, because then the focus at the end became Zaya and Yuki, which will pay off later, but it's like, I don't know, I guess you don't want to give her title matches because then it's like, oh, she's so good, she should win.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm like, I don't know. If you ran like Miyu Watanabe versus Venny, now maybe she's like, well, I don't want to lose.
Yeah.
If you ran that at a Korakuen, I don't know. I think that would draw. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. But
if anything, it would be a great match.
I would run that match in a heartbeat.
So it was just sort of like, depressed. Yeah. A little depressing, but not a criticism of Tokyo Joshi or
no,
you know, anything like that. But I was just sort of like, I wish she was world famous and having great matches all over the place.
Yeah. That being said, I really enjoyed all of her interactions with Mizuki in this match.
Then we got to the title portion of the evening. The first title up for grabs, the International Princess title, and Yuki Arai breaking the defense record with 5, defeating Moka Miyamoto in 15 minutes and 33 seconds. I was sort of shocked to hear that 5 is the record. I guess when I thought about it, it made sense, but it seems like so few defenses, but it isn't really.
Yeah.
If you think you defend it once a month, that's 5 months of having the title, and it feels like no one's really ever had the title that long.
No. Let's see. Yeah, the longest reign was Thunder Rosa.
Well, that doesn't really count.
Yeah, and that was 276 days. Then Hikari Noah had it the longest of like a actual person prior to Yuki Arai.
And defended it. And defended it 4 times.
Yeah.
And then lost it on the 5th defense. Yeah. So I guess it makes sense. It was just sort of like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's right. But anyway, to the match itself. Kelly, I'm fascinated to hear what you thought of this match.
I was kind of bored by this one. I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. I think a big part of it was that I didn't buy that Moka was winning at all. So I was kind of just waiting for it to be over. But like, I don't know. This was another one I just threw a gentleman's 3 at.
Well, not to go back, I have one comment on the gear. And then, look, I think at this point the gear is not changing.
No, it is what it is.
But I have one change to make to the gear, which is, look, we're going to stick with the quilt skirt. I actually think the top is good. Like, if the top never changed, I'd be like, fine. That's totally fine. You know, they have the cutouts on the arms now, so it looks a little bit more something. My one thing is the underside of the skirt and the bicycle shorts should be navy blue.
Yeah.
Why? First of all, the underside of the skirt is white. So every time the skirt goes up, it's like this big white clump that you're like, uh-oh, her skirt's inside out. And then the bike shorts are black. So it looks like, whoops, I'm seeing something I shouldn't be seeing.
Uh-huh.
If they were blue, you could make the argument, oh, they're part of the skirt. They're part of the lower half of her outfit. So it wouldn't look so awkward during the majority of the match when her skirt's upside down and, you know, over her head or whatever, you know. It's just weird to me. Anyway, moving on from that, I was sort of with you. I thought, well, this is sort of going the way I expected, which is it's not all too that exciting. I thought the finishing sequence was strong. I think Mocha is very weird because, and they were talking about this on English commentary in a way that I found that made sense, but I found very strange. In that Aki is like, they were both, Haku and Aki were both sort of like, well, Mocha has no personality. And Aki was like, well, the good thing about being champion is that you get these highlight spots where you have an opportunity to show your personality. And I'm like, it's just very weird that we're talking about this title challenger on the biggest show of the year and being like, who is she? We don't know.
Yeah.
She's a person. She does karate. And I think it's so strange to me in that I actually think she's exciting when she's having these bursts of energy. You know, she's doing karate and she's like, yeah, rah, like that was the end of the match.
Mm-hmm.
Was her sort of having all this screaming, you know, ah, I'm doing karate, blah, blah, blah. However, that was, you know, how long was the match? The match was 15 minutes. That finishing was like 2 minutes of it.
Yeah.
The other 13 minutes, she's like a cipher. She's like such a nothing. Like, she's just a wrestler. Like, it's just like, oh, who is that? Oh, it's a wrestler in the ring.
Yeah, it's
the
wrestler. Oh,
okay.
She does wrestling.
And it's, she needs something to bridge between, oh, I'm this, you know, sort of low personality person and this like, I'm going nuts and I'm gonna karate you to death thing. Cause I think that's good. And, you know, it's one of the things where the outfit is, you know, we always are like, oh, the skirt doesn't make sense. The skirt is weird. But if she wore something that made her look more like a person who does karate, maybe that would help the personality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe that would do something to be like, oh, she's a karate master. But she's not even a karate master.
No.
She's just like a person who knows a couple of karate moves. And occasionally is like, oh, here's a karate move. Okay. I don't know. It's just very, I don't know what it is to me. And it's such an interesting dichotomy to me between this and Suzume and Endo in the next match.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of these are young wrestlers, you know, Suzume and Endo don't necessarily have gimmicks that are like, wow, what an amazing, like, what is Endo's gimmick? Endo's gimmick is like,
I change my hair color a lot.
But they go out and they, you know, Suzume is like, oh, I'm a bumblebee or whatever her original gimmick was. You know, I'm all about honey.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where it's like, what is the difference? I guess the difference is two of them are amazing wrestlers and one of them is sort of an average wrestler, I guess.
Yeah. And Mocha also got her legs cut out from under her by losing her tag partner.
Well, I would say that of Endo and Suzume, one of them got their legs cut out from under them by losing their tag partner.
True.
And I have a hot take in the next match. but anyway, I don't know. It's just...
Is your hot take that they're better for it? Because I would agree with that.
Well, that and we'll get there. But I don't know. It's one of those things where this was sort of like big spot. What can Mocha show us? And the answer sort of is she is like a mid-carder, you know, and she's still young. And in 2 years, something could click and she could be like, here I go, watch me. But I also think it speaks to, again, the thing about, oh, there isn't enough mid-card. You know, the International Princess title is a mid-card title.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, well, it's the biggest show of the year and we're running out Mocha. You know, they have a little bit of story there, but it's still like, oh, we don't have that many more people who can, like, right now, who does Yuki Arai lose this title to?
Ooh. Maki Ito.
I mean, mate, it's just like, who is there?
Yeah.
You know, the people I would think are like people who are very far away from. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, maybe it would be, I don't know, maybe it could be Yuki again or something, you know, Yuki Kamifuku.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be Yuki Aino. I don't know. But it's not like, oh, here comes the brigade of mid-carders to challenge for this title. The people I think will probably hold it are far off and not ready for it yet.
Yeah.
Which would be like the Wakanas, the, you know, that Himawari, people like that. So I don't know. It was in no way a disaster, but I think the match sort of reinforced, oh yeah, Mocha is not at this level
yet. No.
I will say, I think Yuki... It was sort of hard to judge in this match. I would like to see Yuki Arai go again. Like, I would love to see, like, you, as we said, Yuki Arai versus, like, Emi Sakura or something.
Yeah.
Because I would love to see her against someone who I'm like, okay, I know this person is good. And this person, you know, she had the Kong match, but Kong matches are sort of different in that you have to work around Kong's limitations at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Of sort of like, well, she's not the most mobile person, the most mobile Joshi wrestler on earth. But like Emi Sakura to be like, okay, this is a good wrestler who knows how to put together matches, would make Yuki look good. And like, would she look really great or would she look the same? I think she's become very solid, but I'm still wondering about that next step. She has gotten better. You know, the kicks have gotten, they don't look like they're going to, you know. It's like, do a kick on this egg, but you cannot break the egg at all. I think about 3 months ago, Yuki or I could have done that.
Yeah.
And the kicks have gotten better, but would like to see her against sort of more top tier opponents.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, the semi main event of the show, the Princess Tag Team title match, we have new champions as the duo of 1-2-1 million, Maki Ito and Miyu Yamashita, defeated Daisy Monkey of Arisu Endo and Suzume in 23 minutes and 22 seconds. The first thing I would like to say is, I told you so.
Yeah. That my opening note in this review is, God damn it, what a deflating finish to such a great match.
I will say this. I agree with you. I don't know that I thought about it for a second. I am not as opposed to this title change as I have been to some of these wonky title changes in the past. I think for a couple reasons. You know, Daisy Monkey, they got a couple defenses. They've had the title for a bit, so it isn't a spot where like they win the titles and then immediately lose them. Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I thought the story of the match was, look, Daisy Monkey can hang with 1-2-1 million. That was like the clear story of the match to me was, oh, you know, I don't remember who it was on English commentary who said it as the entrances were going on. But they were like, look, Daisy Monkey has defended this title. They have defended the title against, you know, their classmates. They've defended it against people younger than them. This is the test of like the top tier of Tokyo Joshi. And to me, and I think to a lot of the crowd and whatever, they showed, okay, we can hang with them. I mean, Miyu beats like everyone in the company.
Yeah.
Like she, like every match is like, well, no one can beat Miyu Yamashita. Here she is demolishing everyone. And, you know, the fact she didn't go out there and be like, okay, I'm so much better than you. It was like 50-50.
It was a very competitive match.
You know, I think this, and look, in 4 months or 6 months, you know, I could look back and say, well, this was a mistake. You know, 1-to-1 million holds the titles. I have no idea when they're even in the company. I don't know who they lose to, blah, blah, blah. But in 3 months or 4 months, or like on January 4th, on the January 4th, they say, we're doing a rematch of Daisy Monkey and 1-to-1 million and Daisy Monkey win. Like, I think that's an interesting story of Daisy Monkey being like, whoa, we weren't really quite ready. Now we have to get ready and we do stuff and they rematch on the 4th and they win. And then it's like an interesting story. Or Daisy Monkey don't do anything and they don't hold the tag titles for another 2 years. And then I'm like, okay, that actually was stupid. You know, and I think that Tokyo Joshi has done a lot of, you know, the Miyu stuff has been really good.
Yes.
That has been really good. So it's not like the whole company is, oh God, you know, they're putting the titles back on all the veterans again, whatever. You know, and I think with the 756 number, also maybe you look at it and you're like, hey, maybe it might actually be a good idea to at least have one of our titles on, you know, Miyu and Maki for a time. Because we know that they can draw.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure that that's what they were thinking going into it. But I agree. I sort of, I felt about halfway through the match that I was like, okay, 1-to-1 million is winning. I sort of figured it out by the way the match was going and then they won and I was like, okay.
I refuse to let myself believe it.
But I'm less upset. Like I said, I'm less upset than I have been with other changes in the past. That being said, I thought this was an absurdly good match.
Yes.
I thought it was really good. Daisy Monkey is so good. And my sort of hot take question.
Hit me with that hot take.
Well, my hot take question sort of gets dialed down a bit by the fact that Daisy Monkey lost a little bit, which is Endo in a better spot than Mirai? Because the whole thing was Mirai left. She went to Stardom. She won the Cinderella tournament. It was like, oh, she's getting pushed to the moon. Like, she's getting a push. Then she won it again. It's like, oh, my God. Now she's in Marigold. You know, she is a focus there. But I don't know that, you know, you look at them now. And it was like, oh, Mirai left. And Endo's now in such a terrible spot. You know, she lost her tag partner and her tag partner's off winning these tournaments. Now it doesn't feel so clear that it's like, wow, thank God Mirai, like, good thing Mirai left. She got such a better deal out of it.
Yeah, now it's nowhere near as easy as it was to say just like even a year ago. Because a year ago, you just instantly, oh, Mirai. But like, I don't know. Marigold is in such a weird spot at the moment.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
But I went 4 3/4 on this match.
I was just a little bit lower. I was 4.5. I think that was just from the deflating ending for me. I might have gone 4.75 if really, if I think about it more, I probably should. But
yeah,
such a great match.
When I ended, I did think, oh, they lost. Should I go 4.5? But I was like, the match was really good.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens. Like I said, we'll see what happens in 3 months. See what happens on January 4th. If they're back, you know, the story may become, oh, we had to toughen up and then they win the titles back in 3 months. Then I'm like, oh, this actually was a pretty fun story.
I would like to see them run back the like generational battle that they did at Kurakin at the end of last year.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, that kind would of be...
Actually, just like make that into a story. Like, don't just do it as a one-off match. Like, make it your, like, the focus of the company for a little bit. Do it like a generational battle.
Yeah, I guess the one issue I have with that is I don't know that the generation are... Like, you sort of had the generations of the match in December.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you had to change them, like, what is the next generation in terms of, like, people who are ready to do a match like that?
Yeah, I don't... They're not there yet.
That's my one question about that. But...
Yeah.
I mean, Suzume and Endo, it's, like, bizarre... to me, even watching them, to be like, how did they become so good? I don't really understand. Especially looking at other people where you're in Tokyo Joshi, where you're like, oh, hopefully one day they'll, you know, hopefully one day they'll get better and it will be really great. Like, every time they come out, they're better and you're just like, yep, they just get better every match. That's just what happens.
Yep.
Pretty wild. But the main event of the show, the Princess of Princess title match, Miyu Watanabe avenging her defeat to Ryo Mizunami 2 years ago, defeating her for the title in 21 minutes and 19 seconds, a thing I never thought I would see in Tokyo Joshi, a horse battle match.
Hell yeah.
This was awesome. This was great.
Incredible. The first part of my notes is me in all caps saying hose me down.
Just such a great match. I didn't even really take that many notes except in different ways writing about that I liked the match.
I actually have a bunch of notes for this match.
My one note is, well, I have, I guess, two notes, which was the baseball chop to the back of the head at the end of the match was crazy.
Yes.
And also the backbreaker bomb or the backbreaker drop or whatever it was. I was like, that should be your finish. Mm-hmm. That looks really good. But another match, I went 4.75 on this.
I was the same. I was 4.75. It's match of the year candidate material for sure. I loved, like, the finish, like, near the end, where Mizunami just would not stay down. That was standing and pacing in the den material. Just, come on. This is a defining win for Miyu, I think. Like, this could be the peak of her title run. I don't know if it will be, but this match is so good that this is, like, this is the hallmark of this run, I think. At this point, at least. And like, this is, she climbed the mountain that she couldn't before. You know, she lost to Mizunami, what was that, 2 years ago. And now she's stronger than she used to be. She's smarter than she used to be. And she was able to beat her. And just like, she got her up for the giant swing, which was awesome. And like you mentioned, the baseball chop to the back of the neck looked insane. Like, don't use it all the time, but that is a big match move for sure. And just Mizunami was so good here as like this unstoppable monster who felt more like the champion in this match than the challenger. Like, Miyu felt like the underdog here. And just such a great dynamic between the two. Fuck, this was good.
And I think, you know, we've mentioned this in part on the show. you know, they mentioned it on commentary. I don't even think it registered with me that Mizunami was undefeated in those 2 years. Like, I thought about it, and I was like, oh, of course, she's been undefeated. But I guess I didn't think about it. But I don't, you know, they said Mizunami 2 years ago was a last-second replacement.
Yeah, that's right.
Willow Nightingale couldn't get in the country. Like, a fluke. Based on that, I'm not sure how you could book a single person better than they have booked her in these 2 years.
Yeah, it's remarkable to go from a last-second switcheroo to this incredible match that felt important and had a story behind it.
They have used her to sort of, you know, be a measuring stick for a lot of people on the roster. A lot of people on the roster losing, but it doesn't feel like, oh, they're just going into this match and losing. Like, it feels like a step up for a lot of people, one of which was me 2 years ago. You know, putting her in this tournament and now sort of finishing this story. You know, I don't know
what she finished the story.
Yeah, I don't know what Mizunami's going to do moving if she's going to be in Tokyo Joshi more, what's going to happen. But in terms of this story, you know, 2 years ago, Mizunami came in and beat Miyu. Now she's got to face her. Mizunami hasn't lost in the last 2 years. She's red hot, winning this tournament, which is a big deal. The first outsider, you know, a chance for the first outsider to win the title. Just, it was really perfect. And Miyu is like Daisy Monkey. I'm like, of course, this will be a good match. Because she just has the switch. It's still so funny to me when the entrance starts and she comes out in the pink jacket and she's doing L-O-V-E. And then 5 minutes later, she's like screaming into the camera. She's like, ah! And she did the giant swing where she couldn't get her up. And Mizunami was saying something to her and she bent down and screamed in her face. And I was like, it's just such a wild... I don't know that there's any... I haven't thought of this, but if there's anyone else in wrestling who is so different from like, I guess maybe Willow is one, but in terms of I'm making my entrance, you know, Willow has the fun music, like I'm making a fun entrance and now I'm going to get in the ring and I'm going to kill you. But just a great end to the show. You know, as you said, I think if the top two matches had not delivered, it would sort of be a funky show. I thought this was like one of the best Tokyo Joshi shows I had ever seen. I mean, based on the top two being so good.
Yeah.
I really liked the tag. I liked the Emmy match. And they also, they said it on commentary. I felt like the show flew by.
It really did.
They really did not waste any time. It was like, here's a match, here's a match, here's a match. Okay, 15-minute break, and here's some more matches. So it was great to me. You know, disappointing to see not that many fans there. I think the crowd would have really helped in a couple of spots, but, you know, I can't really complain about anything in ring.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, overall, really good show.
So that was Tokyo Joshi's fifth Wrestle Princess. Next, we're going to take a little bit of a left turn, and we're going to talk about Queen of Villains.
The only wrestling show on Netflix that matters.
The new show on Netflix that came out on September 19th. Five long episodes, I would say, though.
Yeah, they were all longer than an hour, I think.
Yes, the last episode was, I believe, 80 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
So really feels like more than five episodes. But I guess I'll say, Kelly, what did you think? I've seen some, not necessarily reviews, but thoughts online. I'm interested to see what you think, because I think I'm slightly out of step with some thoughts that I have seen.
Okay. I was mostly very positive about the show. I thought it did a good job telling the story for the most part. They embellished things a little too much, I thought. And like that kind of got me, like, you it feels like the researchers for the show got worked by some of the wrestlers that they were talking to. It definitely felt like, do they really believe that Dump was just hard busting open everyone? And that everyone was just like, hey, that's bad, stop doing that, but then still like worked with her? So they walked the line too much between, is this all a shoot or is this fake wrestling? And so that kind of, that bothered me a bit, but I could look past it, I guess. I thought the wrestling itself was shot really well. I thought they did a very good job of showing the wrestling action. And I thought that all the actresses were, well, it were good enough workers to pull things up, to pull it off. The only thing in the matches that I could have done was, again, with the embellishments, I didn't need the blood squirting sound effects. But one thing that I kind of felt like was, even with the embellishments, the Dump versus Chigusa hair match is more insane in real life than it was on the show. So it was odd. Like I enjoyed it. I had a good time. I don't regret watching it. I had problems with it, but overall, I don't really have a problem recommending it to people.
Well, we aligned pretty closely. I will say my main thought was, there's something weird is going on, because I feel like this ties in with the Iron Claw.
Yes. Movie. Are you even thinking of the Ric Flair match in the Iron Claw?
Yes. Well, I'm just thinking about, there's a weird thing now where it's like, we're doing these things about wrestling, and there's talk about, oh, well, you know, wrestling is fake. But then there's this weird need to, when people are in the ring, it's like, wrestling is fake, but actually this is real.
Uh-huh.
It's all real. And I'm like, it's not real. You know, I know, putting Iron Claw aside for a minute, I know that All Japan had the matches where it was like, you can, you know, non-determined winner, whatever. This show seems to be saying that the wrestlers were totally out of control.
Yeah.
And could essentially shoot fight anyone whenever they wanted with no repercussions. You know, the brothers going, oh no, what's happening? Oh my God, they're shooting on each other again. I'm like, do you have no control over what's happening here? Like, that to me, I think it's some dramatic thing where people say, well, it isn't very interesting to show wrestling if we're telling people, well, the wrestling is fake. But I'm like, there is something interesting about wrestling.
Yeah.
That you can still say, even if the matches are predetermined.
And that's not even the story you're telling, you know? Like, you're not telling the story of the match itself. That's just a thing that happens in your story about the person.
Yeah, so I think that's the biggest thing to me, is I'm like, why are we repeatedly being like, it's a shoot fight. Oh my God, they're shooting on each other. Oh my God, they're shooting.
Like, and that's what makes me think that the researchers got worked.
But the fact that it was also in Iron Claw that they were like, oh my God, they're shooting, like, makes me feel as if people are looking at this from the outside and going, well, it isn't very interesting if it's a predetermined outcome and they just go out there and do what the predetermined outcome is, which I guess I could see, but it's just like, well, you're not really understanding what makes it like, everyone knows who watches wrestling that it's not real.
You're not, and it's the same thing where, and for whatever reason, wrestling has the stigma to it where it's like, I'm not watching House and having people walk in the room and be like, you know, that's fake, right?
Yes. Like, I mean, I've always thought that, you know, it's fake, right? Argument is so stupid, because I'm like, Yeah, you know, the majority of entertainment you consume is fake.
Yeah.
Correct?
And, like, I don't know why that sticks around with wrestling so much. It's very odd to me.
But it feels like a weird tie in here where it's like, oh, well, actually, it's exciting because, oh, it's real.
Yeah.
I'm like, wouldn't they be arrested for assault?
Yeah, like the amount of times Dump Matsumoto just cracks people in the head with her chains in this show, and everyone's just kind of cool with it.
You know, I will say I thought all the actors were very good. I thought it, I also found it weird that I guess they didn't get the rights to All Japan, because at the beginning. I remember in the first episode or something, they showed some bus that was like All Nippon wrestling. And I was I was like, what? Did they call it that? I have no memory of that. And then it turns out they had just created a fake like company sort of like, because then I saw a logo and I was like, that's not the logo. Is that the logo? And then I looked and I was gaslighting myself because I was like, what's going on? Because they had all the, you know, the wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I guess it was a rights issue. Whoever owns the rights to the name or something.
Maybe
didn't give them permission to do that, I guess. But it really threw me off.
Yeah, no, that's...
At the beginning, because I was like... Wow, I know less about All Japan than I thought I did. I didn't know that they call themselves All Nippon. Like, I didn't know that. I thought they would, you know, would have called themselves Zen Nihon.
Yeah.
So that was funny. But I thought it was enjoyable. I actually did recommend it to a friend to watch. And in terms of the two wrestling-related things on Netflix, I haven't watched any of the other one.
No, I haven't either.
So I would say watch this one.
Yeah. And I have been, when I've been recommending it to my friends, I've been sending them over the post on Segunda Kaida that Kadavri posted about like the kind of fact and fiction of the show, and posting like here's and links to the actual matches and stuff. Whereas it's like either read this or watch it, you know, alongside or after you finish the show, and there's a lot of cool information in there.
Yeah, the person I recommended it to is not deep enough in wrestling where I'm like, I just said it to them and I know they'll just watch it and be like, wow, it's crazy. And I'm like,
yeah,
I'm good. I don't need to do any like, oh, here's what actually happened, because it doesn't really matter to them. But yeah,
this definitely did make me revisit some of that old stuff or watch it for the first time in some cases.
I will drop an exclusive. This is really not useful information to anyone, but I will say it did make me think years ago, back closer to the beginning of this podcast, you know, because this podcast is bi-weekly.
Yeah.
Bi-weekly? Okay.
Bi-monthly would be every other month we'd do an episode.
But I think bi-monthly is also twice a month.
Is it?
I think so. I feel like I've had this same debate on this program before. Anyway, very early on, you know, because we do it every other week, I thought, oh, we should do something in the interim, in between weeks, that isn't, you know, this type of thing, that's something different. And I thought about doing, for anyone who is a Voices of Wrestling Patreon member, a sort of Jovember to Remember style show for All Japan. I have, I believe, like 9 pages of research saved to Google Docs. But the, you know, the issue is that before 1980, whatever, there isn't that much footage.
Yeah.
Like, and the footage is all over the place, and it's not clear, you know, you go on like Cage Match, because I started doing this. You go on Cage Match, they have all these shows listed starting in 1968 for All Japan, and like one out of every 100 show has any footage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a thing where I was like, oh, I would love to do this, but it would be so much of me being like, here's me reading results. What happened on this show? on this show, blah, blah, blah. We have no footage of this show. What happened on this show? Well, also, we have no footage.
I bet it was cool.
Until like the period of time in which many people have seen and are very aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't do that. But this show reminded me of my hopes and dreams from long ago, sadly.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, fun. I was sort of like, oh, I wish they would do like another one about Manami Toyota or something.
I kind of feel like, I don't know if this was a Dump Matsumoto focused show initially. It kind of feels like it could have been at some point just like an ensemble show. And then they're like, I don't know, actually, if we have enough material, let's focus it down on one person. But I think you could keep a show like this going. Like, you definitely have the cast of characters for it.
And I mean, you've sort of set it up at the end with JPW, whatever they call it in the show, like happening. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, because they're also so, you know, they sort of intersect each other, but they are of sort of different, like Toyota is in a different time than like Dump is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know. I don't know initially. I haven't really read anything or much of anything from the creators as to like, why did you do this?
Yeah.
Not like, why did you do this? As in like, how could you do this?
What have you done?
Yeah. But in like, oh, what was the decision here to do this? Is it an, you know, is it an interest in the whole thing where they would be like, oh, it would be fun to do a Manami Toyota one, or it would be fun to do a Aja Kong one or something like that. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Season two. Do it. The Bull Nakano Aja Kong feud.
I was sort of waiting at the end for them to there to be the usual like documentary like thing of like Shigusa Nagayo.
Went
on to form Gaia Girls and still trains wrestlers today. You know, that sort of like cut to a still of their face, you know, a still of their face and then of the real Chigusa being like, you know, which didn't happen, but I was thinking about that after, because there's, I mean, there's so much, because even they're like, oh, Dump's retirement match. I'm like, Dump is wrestling in a show we're about to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, so, sure. Retirement match.
Well, and they didn't really get into the whole idea of people aging out. Like it was sort of like, I'm retiring.
Yeah, that wasn't brought up at all.
Which I think is also an interesting thing, but maybe only interesting to wrestling fans and things like that. But I would say if you're a fan of, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, frankly,
you should watch it.
You should give it a watch.
Yeah. I did think, so like I was starting to watch at the final episode and then it got to the hair match and I was like, I should watch the match. So I stopped watching the show and then fired up the match. And it was amazing how closely they followed like the ring entrances. They got those down perfectly. Like that was kind of amazing. And then, like I said, the match, I think the match itself was more intense than what we got in the show. Because the match itself is insane.
Yeah. I also did like seeing places that I've been and being like, oh, Osaka Joe Hall.
Yeah.
There it is. yes. But anyway, back to current wrestling. What else has been happening over the last 2 weeks? Stardom has had some shows on the 22nd of September. The Cosmic Angels trio of Natsupoi Seiryuno and Tom Nakano retain the Artists of Stardom titles over Hate, Natsuka Tora, Ruaka, and Saya Kamatani. But Hate won the Goddesses of Stardom titles on September 28th, Momo Watanabe and Tekla defeating Saki Kashima and Tsuri. And then they had another New Blood show on the 29th, Rina retaining the future title over Aya Sakura. The Marigold Dream Star Grand Prix has come to an end. The finals. Utami defeating Mai Sakurai in the finals in a match that I thought was very average. And that Grand Prix has come to an end. I know Kelly is very sad to see it go.
I noped out after those first two shows. I was like, I got a bad feeling about this and proceeded to not watch any more of it. And you know what? I'm glad I did. I was so mad when I sent you that tweet where they're like, we're having our opening ceremony in Cork. And I'm like, you're halfway through the tournament. You can't have an opening ceremony now with this fucking half-ass tournament. God damn it, Rossi. You could have had something great.
Kelly, I wish you would tell me how you really feel.
God, I'm so mad at Hatman.
What else has been happening? Seedling had a show on September 23rd. Sari retaining the Beyond the Sea title against Unagi Sayaka. Sendai Girls had a big title change as Team 200 Kilogram, Chihiro Hashimoto, and Yu defeated Bob Momo Banana, the team of Mio Momono and Yurika Oka, to win the Sendai Girls tag titles. And Mika Iwata retained the Sendai Girls world title against Miyuki Takase on September 29th. In Diana, Maika Ozaki retained the Diana title against Himiko. And two shows on the 29th for Marvelous and Wave. Takumi Aroha retaining the AAAW title against Riko Kawahata. And Yuki Miyazaki retaining the Regina De Wave title against Momoko Hanazono. So that is what has been going on in the last 2 weeks. A Joshi Fantasy League update. I am happy to say, Kelly, that for the first time this year, you have a wrestler over 100 points.
Oh, thank Christ.
Rina Yamashita at 101, just getting over 101 points. You are at 383 total points. You are back to 100 points behind Liam.
All right, we're getting there.
Who is at 483. I also should say I did not calculate as not to kick you when you're down, but I think you choosing to remove Miyu Yamashita was a mistake.
At this point, yeah.
Because she ended with 39 points, and that was 3 months ago. And Venny has 52 points.
I wanted to believe so bad.
And Miyu Yamashita just won a title, so she would have been at the very minimum at 49 points.
Yeah, when I dropped Miyu was when she was just fucking around in prestige, like losing every match. And yeah. I was like, well, I wonder if this is just what her future is. I'm like, let's abandon ship now.
100 points ahead of you on 483 is Liam. Slowing down a bit as Unagi Sayaka has slowed down. She is at 129 points, but still some solid picks. Aoi, who started very slow, up at 92 points, doing very well, but up in the lead with 556 points is me again. It's me again, led by me being led by you, who has the league record 163 points currently. Kelly, the bad news is if I were using just my top three point getters,
you would be beating me.
I would be beating you.
Oh.
As I have you on 163, Miyuki Takase on 141 points, and Saya Kamatani up on 105 points. So I am currently 73 points ahead of Liam. Stretching my legs a little. We'll see. I was really helped by a title defense by Miyu Watanabe and a title win by you winning back those Sendai Girls tag titles. So that was very helpful. But that is the Joshi League standings going into October. But what is happening in October? Well, we've got a couple of big shows coming up. Stardom has some upcoming shows. They have a Corican Hall on October 2nd. That is highlighted. Well, maybe highlighted is the wrong word. But the main event of that show is a six-person tag featuring Timeless Toni Storm. I was really excited when Timeless Toni Storm took a break from AEW, not knowing that she would then move to another company that I watch. Everyone else gets a break except for me.
Yep.
And that is all leading to, on October 5th, Stardom Nagoya Golden Fight. Card is as follows. There will be a number one contender match for the high-speed title, six-way number one contender match. Saki Kashima, Koguma, Yuna Mizumori, Hina, Momo Kogo, and Rane Yagami will be in that. Kelly.
Hello.
Who do you think wins that? Sorry, I'm looking at something. Sorry. I'm having a momentary confusion because okay. I wrote this all down from the Stardom website.
Okay, and something doesn't match up.
Well, something doesn't make sense. Which
oh
is
yeah, I see it now.
Hina is in two matches. Is that right?
That can't be right.
Hold on.
Well, and also the second match doesn't make sense on this list because it starts as a tag and then turns into versus four singles people.
Oh, what? Wait, what did I do here?
Your second match reads
no. No, I know what I did there. That was a mistype by me. But what? Anyway, there's a six-way number one contender for the high-speed title. Kelly, who do you think becomes the number one contender?
I'm going to go Saki Kashima and just go chalk.
All right, the next match is a four-way tag team match. Mei Sierra and Azumi will team up to take on Siri and Lady C, Sarah Yano and Aya Sakura, and Hanan and Saya Ida. Kelly, who wins that one?
It's got to be Mei Sierra and Azumi, right? Like, they just feel like the only really... Well, I mean, Hana and Saida, they're an established team, too. I'm going Mei and Azumi.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Next match is a singles match, Saya Kamatani versus Sayaka Karara, followed by another singles match, Azuki versus Starlight Kid. And after that, there will then be an E-Nexus V versus Hate and the Evil Alliance match, piggybacking off Queen of Villains. It will be Maika, Mina Shirakawa, Zena, Waka Tsukiyama, Hanako, and Hina. That must be where Hina is.
Okay.
Versus Dump Matsumoto, Zap, Natsuko Tora, Momo Watanabe, Konami, and Ruwaka. So getting some Dump Matsumoto. Watch her retirement match fictionalized and then watch her wrestle.
It's really funny, like, watching that show and then going back and watching the actual matches. I was like, damn, Natsuko Tora fucking sucks in this role. And now she's going to be side by side with her.
Yeah. Then we get to the big part of the card. Of course, previously announced, Mayu Iwatani will defend her IWGP title against Timeless Toni Storm. Kelly, do you think the Timeless one takes the IWGP title back to AEW?
Yeah, shit, why not?
Okay. Then it will be Rina versus Miyu Amasaki for the Future of Stardom title. Then the big two on the card, the Wonder of Stardom title match, Natsupoi versus Tekla. Kelly, do you think Tekla pulls out the win here?
If she hadn't just become a tag champion, I would say probably, but now I think Poi is going to retain.
And the big one, Tom Nakano versus Suzu Suzuki for the World of Stardom title. That should be a very good match.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I don't think Suzu's going to win, but I would like it very much if she would.
Seedling has a show on October 2nd. The only match announced so far is for the Beyond the Sea tag titles. Ayame Sasamura and Itsuki Aoki will take on the beloved duo of La Pedida and Ka Kedida.
Every time I see those two pop up on a card, I just think, oh, we're still doing this, huh?
Well, there was almost a third.
I know.
That didn't happen. Then Tokyo Joshi has their next big show, All Rise, on October 6th. The card is as follows. Waken Uehara and Haru Kazushiro will face off against Toga and Uda Takami. Yuki Aino, Raku, and Palm Harajuku will face off against Kakeru Sekiguchi, Kira Summer, and Chika Nanase. Suzume will team up with Yoshiko Hasegawa to take on Moka Miyamoto and Kaya Toribami. Mizuki will team with Mihiro Kiryu to take on Andreza Giant Panda and Shino Suzuki.
What a team.
A very tall task for Shino Suzuki.
Tall task.
Well, yes. Not intended, but pretty good. Maki Ito will team with Rika Tatsumi, the ultimate heels, to take on Yuna Manase and Himawari. In a very fun match, Ryo Mizunami will face off against Arisu Endo in one-on-one action. And then there will be a double Queen of Asia and VPW, that would be Vietnam Pro Wrestling Women's title, as Yuki Kamifuku, the double champion, will defend against Xia Zhao. That was set up at the end of their match on Wrestle Princess. And then as we discuss the main event, Miyu Watanabe will team with Miyu Yamashita to take on Shoko Nakajima and Mako Satomura, a big match. They're excited to see Mako make one last stop in Tokyo Joshi. But overall, I think a pretty fun card.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the last time I actually saw Mako Satomura wrestle.
You mean just like on video or
in real time, like have a match that was somewhere that I watched, and I think it might be like 2019.
I think that's probably, well, when did she leave for WWE?
I feel like it was pre-pandemic, right?
But was it before 2019?
I don't know,
let me look it up. Do
because I want to say it's, I feel like I haven't watched a new match of hers in years.
Let's see, career. She went to WWE in 2018. Oh no, she was there for the Mae Young Classic, so that doesn't count. 2021. I thought she went earlier than that.
Okay, maybe I saw her.
Oh wait. Did I watch Mako Satomura and Minoru Suzuki defeat Jinsei Shinsaki and Nanai Takahashi?
That's
I think
exactly
I did watch that.
What I looked at. I think I saw that.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's what I think, because that was June of 2021.
Yeah, and I didn't watch Fortune Dream from this year.
Yeah.
You watched the Bayley match, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I did. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
I didn't see that, but I remember you talking about it.
It was such a nothing match. It was such a... Everyone was like, oh, we can't believe it, how good it is. And I watched it. I was like, this is a freaking house show match. What are you talking about? That's right. I wiped it from my mind. That is the last time I saw Mako Satomura. Thank you for recalling my own memories.
Yeah. I think the last match of hers that I like actively remember seeing is the Kagetsu retirement show match.
Oh, yeah.
And that was just before the pandemic.
Well, it's been a while.
Yeah.
And we'll probably get to see more than this one as she closes in on retirement.
So is she done with WWE now?
I think she is, mainly because she's retiring and they're sort of like, well, we don't really have anything to do with
it. Yeah.
Although I don't really know, because I don't keep up with
WWE. I was like, are they just going to have her come out to NXT and lose to Roxanne Perez or whatever, whoever the fuck?
She could lose to Julia.
She could lose to Julia.
Julia Gulia. Anyway, Tokyo Joshi also will be doing another Next Generation tournament starting on October 13th. That will have the previous class that was in last year's along with the younger wrestlers, except for Runa Okuba, who is currently out of action. So will not be in the tournament, but that will be happening in Tokyo Joshi in Diana.
Is it hurt or is it school?
I don't know. I just read a thing that was like, she's not in the tournament. I think it was on Dramatic DDT that said she's not in the tournament because she's out of action, which sounded like she was injured. Let's see. Yeah, Runa Okuba is currently out of action and will not be entering the tournament.
All right.
The injured Runa Okuba won't be competing. Yes, okay. That is from Dramatic DDT.
Okay.
Yes, she is out of action with an injury she suffered during her match at Wrestle Princess 5. Thank you to Dramatic DDT for that information. What else is happening? Diana is doing a Korakuen Hall show that is main evented by Haruka Umasaki versus Momo Watanabe.
All right.
And that's everything happening in the next 2 weeks of Joshi. So we'll have Nagoya Golden Fight to talk about next time. We'll have All Rise and much more to talk about next time you hear our beautiful voices on this program. But now it's time, as always, for Kelly's Corner.
For this week, I would like to yield my time, and I would like to hear about your time at AEW Grand Slam.
Oh, it's so funny because I don't remember when it was, but not the last time I went to a TV taping, an AEW TV taping. I'm like, I cannot go back to these things. They're exhausting. And yeah. I feel like I had also had the bad luck of going to multiple shows that didn't have great cards. Like the shows happened and I was like, well, that wasn't really that good of a show. And also it's exhausting to do this. Like, to be up at midnight watching Tony Nese versus Action Andretti or something.
I think that you last wrestle for ring. Yeah, TV I went to had that horrible Chris Jericho Keith Lee match.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. Then I haven't. Well, they only came back once since then, and I was like, I'm good.
But it's like, oh yeah, we're filming 2 hours of Ring of Honor now. And it's like, well, why don't you just leave? And I have discovered I have an inability to leave. I'm like, wrestling's still happening. I can't miss the wrestling.
Yeah, what if something cool happens?
I will say this. When I arrived, I was not put in a good mood because the setup looked like garbage to me.
Yeah, it didn't look great.
I've been to now every Grand Slam that they've done at Arthur Ashe. And it's usually exciting. You know, they usually have the special set. This was very much like, oh, we're filming in an arena, except we're filming not in an arena, but we're going to pretend we are. That being said, Dynamite was very good. You know, my favorite wrestler of all time is Bryan Danielson. The first live Ring of Honor show I ever attended was main evented by Bryan Danielson versus Nigel McGuinness.
Oh, that's cool.
Back in 2006. So I've always sort of had a special connection to that match. So I was very excited for many months about the possibility of them doing it. And then very excited when they did it at a show that I was going to.
And the match delivered.
Yeah. And it was a great match. And the show was really great. You know, I really liked Mox and Darby. I really liked the tag title match. I thought they were all very good. So yeah, that was great. I still think, you know, they filmed Collision after the fact, which ended at like 12:15 in the morning with
that's too long.
Kazuchika Okada, you know, which was better than like finishing with Ring of Honor, but I still sort of left being like, and now I'm tired. And also Collision was not really that good.
And also it's a Wednesday night.
Yes. It's a Wednesday night and I'm at a venue that's like an hour and 20 minutes away from me.
Yeah.
So that was, but for the Dynamite portion, like if I had left the minute Dynamite ended, I would have been like, oh, this is by far like no competition, the best AEW TV taping I've been to, you know, leagues removed.
Yeah.
You know, and part of it's like, oh, there's less people here, but it was also nice getting in the venue, being like, I'm not fighting with anyone to get, like, I just walked in.
Nice.
Whereas, you know, the first year when there was 20,000 people there, it was like, okay, I'm waiting in line. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. The, you know, to get food takes 45 minutes because they're not prepared. Like, this was like, I walked up to get the food. I actually got merch for the first time at an AEW show because the lines
were
ungodly long.
And they actually had something worth buying?
I bought a Darby Allin sweatshirt.
Wild.
Because I was like, oh, that's fun. Because I don't really like t-shirts. I don't really buy t-shirts. Just because, what's the point? But I was like, oh, this is fun. I'll buy this. And I ended up waiting like 10 minutes. Which, that's considering some shows I've been to, I'm like, oh, this line would take you 2 hours to get.
Yeah.
To. Was pretty good. But yeah. It was fun. You know, I wish more wrestling would come to New York. Not much wrestling does. Marvelous, run more U.S. shows, because Marvelous ran those U.S. shows before I was, I think, aware of who they were back in like 2010 or something, or 2012 or whatever it was. And I'm like, oh, I wish they would come back. Like Tokyo Joshi, run a show at what's it called now? Not the Hulu Theater. The something where AAA ran.
Gabe, bring back Evolve and run New York.
I mean, the theater at Madison Square Garden. Sorry, not. It is no longer called the Hulu Theater as of this year. But yeah, Tokyo Joshi, come to New York, please. Yeah. Thank you. And that's all. That's all I have to say.
All right. Well, I'm glad you had a good time.
Well, thank you. Thanks for asking.
Hey.
And that will bring an end to this episode of Jumping Bomb Audio. For Kelly, I am Taylor, and we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.